morning on 1620 The Zone, 1620thezone.com, and the 1620 The Zone app. Here's Jimmy Allen and Rob Love.
Here it comes. A swing and a miss. Ball game. And the Guardians have swept the Tigers. They get their ninth win in extra innings. And after Detroit got two in the ninth to tie it, Cleveland comes back to beat Detroit in 10 innings, 4-3.
Welcome back to Sharp and Betting in the Morning. Jimmy Allen and Rob Love in for the guys this morning. That is a highlight from the Cleveland Guardians, which could only mean that Michael J. Schaefer from Huskers 24/7 is joining us here on the line. Schaefer, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are we doing, gentlemen?
Not as good as your Guardians, man. Five-game win streak. How are you feeling about them?
Pretty good, but you're only as good as your most recent losing streak. I mean, that's how baseball works. So they got the Blue Jays this weekend. We'll see if they can sneak out of Toronto with at least one. I'll feel okay about it.
A little stiffer competition than the boys in Detroit.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Tigers are really bad. Like, they're just a bad organization and a bad team right now. So if Cleveland could get more games against Detroit, I'd be okay with that. I think Tom Hamilton was saying on the radio yesterday, since 2016, Cleveland has won 50 more times against Detroit in their contest. They're like 50 games over the medium spot, I guess. I don't know how I'm phrasing this, but
the middle of the pack, basically
38 or something like that. So it's absurd. The Tigers are really bad.
Worst franchise, Tigers or Lions?
Oh, the Lions. I mean, the Tigers at least have had moments. And they've had, you know, like, they were in two World Series and they weren't competitive in either of them. But they were there. They won their division. They were like a feared opponent in the 2012 or whatever. The Lions in my entire lifetime have never been feared by anyone.
I only asked you that because Chance is a Lions fan. I don't know if you
like
know
I famously poo-pooed the whole Matthew Stafford trade because I still don't think he's that great.
Agreed.
But he certainly was for the Rams at times last year. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of hype for Dan Campbell's second year in Detroit. I don't get that.
Come on, Deese nuts.
I'll take the under. I'll take the under on the win total there. And I feel pretty good about it.
As somebody that bet the win total for the over on the Lions, I hope you're wrong.
Well, sell me on it. Like, what's the case for this team? They have, like, are you really that excited about DeAndre Swift? They have, like, less known wide receivers than the Nebraska Cornhuskers, and I don't even know if Nebraska has great wide receivers.
I really like Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think he's a guy that could be a star in this league for several reasons. He's got elite speed in my mind. And they seem to have found a way to utilize him kind of in the Debo Samuel-esque role a year ago, more of like a jet sweep than an actual running back guy. And, I mean, I just really feel like Jared Goff can only go up from a year ago. I don't know if that's necessarily a term of endearment. But Jamal Williams, I think, is going to be a factor in that run game this year, too. And you added DJ Chark to the equation. I mean, they've added some pieces. Maybe not anybody that to write home to the Hall of Fame about, but.
Well, yeah. But they've had Hall Hamer.
That's good. That's a good point. I mean, Calvin Johnson was okay, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I don't see it. Like and maybe it's just the complete bias of watching the Lions flail for 30 years. But I don't see it. We can revisit this and.
Schaefer, I wish you could see Chance. I wish you could see Chance just squirming in his chair right now.
Yeah.
Hey, this game in Dublin, though, it's much closer. If it's much closer than the game in Lincoln was a year ago, and it resembles more of the closer game we've come accustomed to seeing between Nebraska versus Northwestern, but Nebraska still squeaks out a win, is that good enough for you to be happy at the start of the season, or in your eyes, does it have to be impressive again for them to get to the momentum they want to?
I think the name of the game is just get out of Dublin with a win. Like, I don't expect whatever happens in Dublin to be reflective of what Nebraska is for much of the 2022 season. I mean, you're talking about two teams that have a lot of question marks that are going to be playing each other on week zero in kind of a weird circumstance. Like, it's hard for me to extrapolate that this is going to be the kind of game that, you know, tells you a lot about your team one way or the other. I mean, we're going to know a lot more about Nebraska by the time they're done with Georgia Southern. You get that extra two games in there. Even though you're playing North Dakota and Georgia Southern, you're still going to know more about this team, I think, than you will in that first game. Because there's so many firsts in there. It's the first with Casey Thompson. It's the first with Mark Whipple. It's the first with a number of coaches and players. I mean, you have such a different, unique roster, and you're doing this in a different, unique setting. It's just hard for me to think that anything matters more than beyond just getting a win. They win 13-10, and it's ugly and terrible, and you don't know if the defense is good or Northwestern's offense is bad. You don't know if Northwestern's defense is good or Nebraska's offense is bad. It doesn't matter. They just have to leave with a win. It's the simplest, easiest sort of parameter possible, but very difficult for Nebraska to just leave with a win. But if they just leave, however it looks, however they play, you know, whatever the stats are, just come home 1-0, and that's all that really matters in that context.
Mike, have you noticed any slight differences in preparation by the coaching staff leading up to week zero, given the travel and transport and logistical factors involved?
Not a lot yet, but I think we're coming into that. I think these next 2 weeks we've had a shift in kind of what the media schedule is going to look like. I mean, they're a week away from leaving.
Yeah.
It's Monday that they're going to be flying out of that game week. So, I mean, it's, We're not far from it. They're only still here in town for like 10 more days. So they've got a lot to do. I think they also have to kind of tweak kind of what the schedule is going to look like. I'm probably more intrigued by what the return week looks like, that North Dakota week where they're going to get back at like 5 a.m. in Lincoln on Sunday morning, go to bed, wake up in the afternoon, have to, you know, start going through meetings and prep for North Dakota and practice, get their body clocks back going. So I think, and just from talking with people over there, I think there's more concern about they handle it on the back end. And that's, you know, with a result either way. Like if they lose that game, that North Dakota game becomes scarier because they mentally have to be at a better spot. I think there's more concern about the back end than the front end. But it's going to be a unique thing. I mean, and just add that to the list of things that's completely different about this experience.
We're in the middle of the Detroit Sports Hour with Michael J. Schaefer from Husker 24/7 on the line. Teddy Prochazka is still dealing with a little bit of the nagging issues from that injury a year ago. It sounds like Turner Corcoran is a little banged up as well. How much concern do you have about this offensive line as far as the injury bug goes? And at what point do you start to worry about the longevity of those two guys this season?
It's a weird kind of dual answer. I have concern about both of those two guys in Corcoran and Prochazka because Nebraska really needs them to be healthy for a variety of reasons. I'd always sort of wondered if Prochazka was even going to be available for this game against Northwestern because that timeline and turnaround seems really fast to me. And I know that, you know, a number of guys, I think Adrian Peterson was one of the fastest to come back from it with a late November and was ready to go that next year and ran for 2,000 yards and everything else. But I kind of wonder if Nebraska is going to be able to get a full game from Teddy Prochazka and what that actually looks like, because it's still an ACL. You don't want to come back too soon. You don't want to push it too hard, but he's been full go, and he'll be the first to say that he's been rusty and he's got to get better. But I think Nebraska really needs both of those guys to be honest. Like, if they're not able to give you their best going against Northwestern, you might be better off looking at the backups just for that one game or, you know, easing them into it. Maybe you're talking about a rotation on that offensive line. But the one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is they have a lot of depth. And, you know, it's not depth that comes along with guys that are going to be all Big Ten performers if the starter steps out, but it's depth of guys that have played games before. I mean, if Kevin Williams has to come in and be your left tackle, he's at least started college football games. If Brant Banks has to come in and be the left guard, he's started college football games. Same for Ethan Piper. You know, the only guy who doesn't really have that would be Henry Lutowski, and he might have the most upside of all the backups. So I think that there's reason to be at least cautiously optimistic that from a personnel standpoint, Nebraska could withstand, you know, guys being hurt or being slow to start the year. Because they have more depth on that offensive line than what probably meets the eye or what you think about, given how bad they were.
Given sticking with Prochazka and Corcoran, if they are to be put on a pitch count per se, How do you feel that that may affect the running game against Northwestern?
Yeah, I mean, that's like the – even if you remove the pitch count, the running game against Northwestern is like the million-dollar question, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we went through this last year where Nebraska was running the ball well, and they're committed to getting downhill, and they were going to find a workhorse running back, and they showed up in Champaign, and it might have been the most pathetic, you know, pathetic running game attempt ever for Nebraska. And so I honestly don't know. I don't know how much it would affect any of that, because if Prochazka isn't 100% full go, if Turner Corcoran isn't 100% full go, how does that affect the run game? You know, so if you're only getting 80% of those guys, is that better than the backup? Is that, you know, does that limit your ability to get the push that you need against the Northwestern front that they weren't good last year, but Pat Fitzgerald usually has a pretty good defense. And so you at least expect them to technically be sound and to be in the areas where they need to be. So it's kind of a fascinating question all the way around. I look for Nebraska to be able to move the football on the ground, regardless of what their offensive line looks like. I think they have a little bit better feel for their running back room at this point. I think the offensive line is going to do fine. And I've really kind of come around with, you know, Donovan Raiola and what that offensive line can do in terms of, you know, running the football. I'm a little bit more hesitant about how the pass protection is going to hold up, especially if Teddy Prochazka is as rusty and is, you know, learning the game. We talk about him like he was a, you know, two-year starter. He played two games at left tackle. Like, that's the list of his resume right there. They were really good, you know, game and a half against maybe the best pass rusher in college football last year. But still, I mean, there's still a lot of development left for him, too.
Speaking of longevity at starters, Nebraska's replacing two guys with 6 years of experience at safety. Who do you expect to take over those two safety roles?
Yeah, I was talking to Brian Christopherson this morning, and he feels like Omar Brown has really kind of made a push lately, and they've got kind of four guys there, but he thinks to start the year it's going to be Miles Farmer, Marquise Buford, and then he kind of had Brown and Deshaun Singleton as the backup. You know, Travis Fisher, he loves to rotate guys. Wouldn't be surprised if whoever starts here at the beginning maybe isn't the one starting, but they're still going to be involved. So I would look for, you know, some form of Farmer Buford followed by Brown and Deshaun Singleton. And I look for Omar Brown to take a job, you know, by the end of this. He's a really talented guy. Way back when, I had him probably as my number one transfer portal addition. I mean, he's the guy that had the most success out of anybody, has the most experience out of anybody that has come in. And we saw that last year with Samari Toure. It took a little bit, and then he became a guy that was a really effective player. And just, you know, the transition coming from the FCS level, you're talking about the FCS newcomer of the year with seven interceptions as a defensive back. He's going to play a little bit of a different position. But I would definitely keep an eye on Omar Brown to kind of make a surge early in the season.
Do you think that, speaking of the defensive backfield, do you think Tommy Hill and talents of the like that we have this season in the defensive backfield, do you think they will have a larger effect in helping the defensive line be successful? Or will the new faces on the defensive line help the defensive secondary make their job easier this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be kind of working together, certainly. But I think I don't have a lot of concern about Nebraska's ability to defend the pass. And part of that is I think the pass rush is going to be good. I think between Garrett Nelson, Caleb Tanner, and O'Shawn Mathis, you got three guys right there that can wreak havoc. I think that Eric Shenander is going to get a little weird, get a little fun with how he brings some pressures. And he needs that pressure to come from guys like Luke Reimer and Nick Henrich, too. I mean, when he calls a middle blitz, they have to not only get home, they have to be at minimum disruptive. But, two, when they have that opportunity, and Luke Reimer was guilty of this a little bit, too, he kind of would come in and then quarterbacks were able to invade him a little bit. So they got to be a little bit better there. And then I like, you know, Blaze Gunnarsson, Jamari Butler behind those guys. And then you throw in that secondary. Travis Fisher can't stop talking about Tommy Hill. I think Quentin Newsome's set up to have a good year. I just think if Nebraska is able to force teams to pass a little bit, they can unleash their pass rushers and just maybe some exotic blitz packages. This might be a team more so than last year that's built to turn other teams over. They might give up more yards or big plays, but they might also be a better opportunistic defense. Last year was very much a bend, don't break. That's how they were built. This year kind of feels like a, you know, we're coming after you, and if you put that ball up there, we think our guys are winning 50-50.
Let's say that's the case and Nebraska wins. It's a much better year and wins maybe 9 games. You think Eric Shenander's a guy that whose name comes up for job openings at the head coaching position somewhere else in college football?
I think it should. I kind of hesitate to know where that would come from. You know, like, would Northern Iowa call him to be their head coach and would he take that job? I think he could probably do better than that.
Me too.
But, like, if a MAC school comes calling and you're Eric Shenander, do you want to stick around and see if you can get to a Power 5 program? Or do you just go ahead and start your career as a head coach at that point? I mean, I really like Eric Shenander. I think that he is going to be a very good head coach at some point in his career. I don't know if that's going to happen right away next season. But if Nebraska has success and that defense kind of does what I think it can, he's going to be on the short list for some of those Group of Five jobs. And I think he'd be a really intriguing candidate. I really like what he brings to the table. I mean, I don't think this is breaking news by any means, but I suspect he's the most popular coach on that team over there. He just has a great relationship with a number of guys, and he's well loved. And I think that a program would be well suited to look into him.
How important is it, and not that Northwestern is a juggernaut of an opponent nor is this a super important game for, say, the season's outlook, but how important is this game's outcome for the future outlook of, say, the 2023 and 2024 recruiting class sentiment about Nebraska going forward with the recruiting process?
Well, I mean, if you start off 0-1, you're going to have a lot of commentary about whether Scott Frost is even going to make it through the end of the year. So I think that in itself kind of puts a potential stall on what 2023 and 2024 recruiting could look like. If you win that game and you get kind of the runway leading to 3-0 Nebraska versus undefeated Oklahoma, you're probably talking about 2 ranked teams. A game in Lincoln that has a little bit of juice to it for the first time since the sort of atrocious 2019 Nebraska-Ohio State game. We're probably talking about a pretty big visit weekend and a number of 2024s and 2025s coming to campus and all of that stuff. So it really kind of feels like it could go large on either side, and which is sort of ridiculous because it's one result and it doesn't have to tell the story of your season. But that's kind of where we're at. Like, Nebraska's in a series of these sort of tests where it kind of has to be passed.
Yeah.
And if you fail, it just feels like the ground is going to crater from underneath of you.
So do you think, let me ask you this, follow-up. So let's say they don't pass with 100% or 90% plus on the test. What if they only pass with, say, a 70 to 75%? Does that kind of, do you think that, say, local recruits especially, like Malachi Coleman and the such, do you think they might be like, here we go again, and just kind of be turned off and they're expecting to see more with the personnel that's been added on the coaching staff and as well as on the field?
Possible. I mean, I look at a guy like Malachi and I don't know that a losing season precludes him from ending up at Nebraska.
Okay.
I think
okay.
a lot of it comes down to who's going to coach him and does he feel comfortable with that person?
Yeah.
If there's a coaching change, he's going to keep a real big eye on what happens to Mickey Joseph, who's got a contract through 2023 anyways. So for a Malachi Coleman, if Mickey Joseph is still involved in some capacity, I don't think he goes anywhere else. I think as long as Mickey Joseph's at Nebraska, Malachi Coleman wants to be at Nebraska. You know, for other recruits, it might be a little bit of a different thing. You look at someone like Caleb Benning, and if Nebraska goes 4-8, he's probably not looking at Nebraska thinking, okay, my dad went here, this is where I want to spend my time. You're probably talking more about a Keegan Johnson situation at that point. And then where you got Tyson Terry, you've got Christian Jones. I mean, there's some real talent. Deshaun Prince. There's some guys further down this class, Carter Nelson, that, you know, if Nebraska doesn't win this season, if Scott Frost is fired and they have to start over, it's really going to depend on who gets that head coaching job and the sort of work that they do right away within the state, because I don't think there's any real slam dunk. I mean, I think a lot of people at this point in time are like, okay, most of my adult life, Nebraska's been bad. why do I want to go there for school? I mean, I think that's really what it's going to come down to. So, it, you know, if it gets really bad and then you kind of have a bizarre hiring situation, you end up with another Mike Riley of sorts, but that could end up really hurting your ability to recruit in-state. I think it only gets harder to keep the kids closer to home when it doesn't feel like winning is a real option.
Did you get your IT customer service issue worked out the other day?
Yeah. I mean, one of them. I'm sure I've had seven more pop up. So I used to think that I could handle a lot of this stuff, but now I just realize I'm an idiot like everybody else. So I'm not special. I don't have any talents. All I can do is get on the chat or on the phone and talk to whoever. And they have to walk me through it. Then they have to explain it like four times. And then it'll work, and then I'll feel really stupid because it was kind of a simple solution all the way along. But, you know, that's life. That tells me I'm getting old.
Well, if you ever need me, buddy, just give me a phone call, and I got you. That's Michael.
I will keep that in mind.
That's Mike J. Schaefer from Huskers 24/7. Schaefer, we appreciate you. Have a good day, bud.
All right, guys. Have a good one. Have a good weekend coming up, and enjoy the dog days before the season starts.
You too, sir. You too. Go Guardians.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Oh, I think I hung up on. Sorry, Schaefer, I didn't mean to hang up on you. My bad. That was Michael J. Schaefer from Husker 24/7. Apparently, Detroit sports extraordinaire. We are going to take a break here. Come back. Touch on a few topics. Matt Versal is going to join us at 9:40 to wrap up Sharp and Benny in the morning. Jimmy Allen in for Gary. Rob Love in for Dan Benny. We'll be right back.